This is 16-9, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16-9 has been online now for more than a decade, writing about the digital signage industry and filtering all the BS. Now 16-9 is also a podcast, a chance to talk to smart people doing interesting things in this business. You can listen to episodes online, grab it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to grab the RSS feed. 16-9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. I had a chance recently to tour the New York studio and offices for ESI Design, which has done some amazing experiential digital work in public spaces as well as museums and in retail settings. Michael Schneider is a senior experience designer and creative technologist at the company, and we spent time talking about the design process behind creating big, interesting, and memorable digital canvases. Among many, many projects through the years, ESI Design was the firm behind the giant fence board-like experience at the Wells Fargo office tower in Denver, and a sensor-driven ambient media wall in the lobby of a building in Washington, D.C. To Schneider and to the rest of the team at ESI, it's not about the tech, it's about the story.
Tell me about what ESI Design does.
ESI Design designs experiences, mm-hmm. meaning how do people engage with a story, a narrative through physical space, through the things that they're doing mm-hmm. in that space.
And is it strictly focused on physical spaces? Like, you don't do web design for companies or anything like that unless it's part of an overall job?
Correct. I mean, we you know, all of those pieces are necessary parts of an overall journey or overall engagement strategy. Right. But we won't just do the web design. We'll do a website or a web design if it's important for us to engage with people before they get to the space and to maintain a relationship with them after mm-hmm. they leave the space.
Right.
But just the web design on its own, we won't mm-hmm. just take on that piece.
And you're getting engaged by companies because they want to do something immersive, experiential in their physical space, whether that's a museum, a corporate lobby, all that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the three major sectors that we're working with are the institutional, so museums. Mm-hmm. We did all new exhibitry for the Immigration Museum in Ellis Island. Mm-hmm. We're working on the new museum at the Statue of Liberty. We did the Edward M. Kennedy Institute for the Senate up in Boston. Mm-hmm. We work in the retail space, working on flagship stores. We did the Comcast store, flagship store in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And we've been doing a lot in the media architecture world. So commercial real estate spaces that need to engage with their environment in a new way.
And those are three really different clients.
They're three really different clients. They are, but a remarkably similar challenge, design mm-hmm. challenge. And you know, all three of those clients have a story to tell mm-hmm. and they need design work to understand how to craft that story in a way that is engaging and can be evolving.
Right.
So that it's a living story. Mm-hmm. And then figuring out what are the tools to get people involved in the telling of that story. So mm-hmm. it can be the story of immigration, it can be the story of Comcast, and it can be the story of how this big building exists within physical space and right. why these people come in and out every day. Mm-hmm.
And the real difference I see in listening to your presentation yesterday is your background as an artist and in to some degree in storytelling, and how you and this company at large approaches projects as storytelling exercises as opposed to a technology job.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I find really interesting working here is that we really are based on this notion of we're not creating objects, we're creating experiences, we're mm-hmm. creating programming. You know, our founder, Edwin Schlossberg, designed the Brooklyn Children's Museum in the early 70s, and it was this major shift away from an artifact-based experience to a programming-based experience. What mm-hmm. do you do in this space? Mm-hmm. There might be some objects, but it's not about them. It's about your engagement right. with other people around them. And we're still doing the same thing, just in a much broader space. So all of our designers here need to be keyed in to the user experience and starting with what are you going to feel? What are you going to experience? What are you going to learn? Mm-hmm. Who are you going to engage with when you step into a space?
Mm-hmm. It was interesting when you were talking about how the process works with a new client. And could you maybe describe that? Because it's way beyond just kind of having a look at things and say, okay, we'll come back to you with an idea.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, different clients obviously have very different relationships with different types of clients. On the institutional side, there's very often a much stronger or clearer directive of this is the story we need to tell, and then we can figure out the best way to tell that story.
So maybe related in terms of, you were talking about Terrell Place in Washington yesterday, and what all happened there, all the way down to kind of walking the neighborhood.
For our media architecture projects, where we really need to understand how this building interacts with its environment, we need to understand the building in relationship to the streets around it, the building in relationship to the city that it sits in, the building in relationship for the building management, the people that run the building, drive the building in relationship to the people that work in the building, and building in relationship to the brokers and the people that are going to be renting out spaces in the building. So our team always goes on a site survey. There'll be 3, 4, maybe 5 different designers that will go down and spend a number of days on location, interviewing the different people that work with the building, walking the streets in the neighborhood and taking extensive photographs of all the different views and the different shops and the different rhythm of the space, making sure that we understand from 6 a.m. until midnight the whole flow of the environment. Because one of the most important things that we need to do is understand the rhythm of the space, because whatever we do has to be part of that rhythm, has to work within that rhythm. So after we do all of these interviews of this site assessment,
steam heat,
yes, good old New York buildings, we come back and we really lay out a whole site survey deliverable, which talks about what we've observed, where we see as potential areas for intervention, and how those different areas of intervention support different types of relationships. So in a Columbia Center, which is a 76-story tower in Seattle, it was important that it could build a relationship with the city through a series of crown lighting that we put on the top that was all controllable and shifted according to holidays. And
okay, so the kind of lighting that you see on the Empire State Building here and so on?
Yes.
Okay.
So,
which we can see out the window.
Yes, we can. And, you know, in this building, because it's this very geometric, these big arcs, instead of doing wash lighting, we really did highlight lighting and just highlighted the geometry of that building. But, you know, in that example, in the site survey, we said, okay, if we can illuminate the top of the building, we can engage with the city. And then on the site ID that's down at the street level, well, let's continue that line in the sky and let's bring it down to street level. And now we've got a line that mimics the same line on the skyline that now engages with people going by in the street. And then we can step inside the lobby and we can continue that relationship with these really cool LED sculptures that hang in each of the corners that also change in regarding to what's going on in the sky. And so in the original site assessment, we don't know what each of those ideas are, but we'll say, okay, the roof we need to activate to engage the city. The street, the entry we need to activate, connecting it to what's going on the roof and then bring it down to the street. Okay, you step into the lobby, and in that case, we need to do some wayfinding. It's a triangular space, which is impossible to navigate. So let's put some really iconic pieces in each of the corners of the triangle so people know how to move through the space, but let's keep them connected to the sky in some way. You know, and we kind of move through the space and we call out where there's areas that we want to do something and who that engages, why we're doing it there. And then we'll pull some precedent imagery from either work that we've done before or work that's out there in the world to give a sense of kind of look and feel so that we can get feedback from the client as to, yes, this is the right kind of lifestyle feeling for this design, or, you know, we want to go more techie or something that's a little more nature leaning. And that process in the beginning is really useful for us to get feedback from the client. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll say, you know what, we really don't want to put the money into the roof line on this building, but we really think it's more important to engage with the street. Mm-hmm. And so we can really have that discussion in a knowledgeable way because we've lived in that building for a little bit. We've become experts, even if it's in a tiny piece of it, but we've become experts enough in that building to have a more educated conversation with the client.
And how much of a brief would you typically get from a client? Like, do they have a sense of what they want to do, or they've seen other work that ESI has done and said, you guys get it. I like how you've executed on other jobs. Here's this. Come back to us with ideas.
I'd say it runs the gamut. I'd say it's more on, hey, can you guys come and take a look at this site? Come and take a look at this plan and help us understand an overarching media architecture or digital communication strategy mm-hmm. for this site, mm-hmm. for how we're going to engage with the people that are moving through the site. And then, you know, we'll do a first pass, in effect, that site survey, mm-hmm. and deliver back a report mm-hmm. of some different approaches. There definitely are clients that come and say, okay, this is a wall. We need to figure out how to make this wall active.
We saw what you did here. Can you do that there?
Right. But even in those cases, you know, we'll start from this common starting place, but we will, you know, we'll have our teams go and take some divergent paths and see mm-hmm. If there's ways that we can push the designer, mm-hmm. take it to the next step for each project.
How do you quantify something that's largely experiential, the value of it?
You know, I think for our commercial real estate work, it gets quantified when they can lease out spaces quicker at higher rents. They can sell it for more than they bought it for. Mm-hmm. So it becomes quantified later in the game.
It's a building that people want to be in.
Exactly.
And bring clients into and everything else. And this is different. And there's a wow factor to it that actually translates into leasing rates per square foot.
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, in a recent project I worked on, the owner was thinking about asking leasing rates that were at the high end of the market, and all the brokers that had come by initially didn't totally understand that. Mm-hmm. After we did our design and I went to the big broker event where they invite all the local brokers in, mm-hmm. At that event, the nonstop feedback that we heard was, oh, now we get it. Mm-hmm. Now we're gonna start bringing people by here. Because we can bring in those higher rates now.
Right.
Because there's a story we can refer to this building. Mm-hmm. It has something unique about it that really stands out, that people understand how to engage with. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden, it went from not sure if we'll bring by our clients to definitely this is a building that's going to be first on the stop.
So this is the new version of an amenity that maybe 40 years ago was a water fountain in the lobby.
It is, and it takes it to the next level where mm-hmm. this is a space where you've got a really competitive market now for good, talented employees. And so these smaller companies that might rent a floor or half a floor are competing with really cool spaces that a larger tech campus can offer. Or on a smaller side, you can go to WeWorks and get cool shared amenities, mm-hmm. where a typical half floor office is not going to be able to offer those. So it's not just the water fountain, it's also a shared amenity that people are excited to hang out, to have mm-hmm. impromptu meetings, be able to stay late at work and feel excited to stay late because mm-hmm. they're part of something that's got a rhythm, that's exciting. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden the building owners can rent out smaller spaces to companies that feel like they can now compete for good, talented
right.
employees.
So one of the things you spoke about yesterday in your presentation was your impression of quote unquote traditional digital signage, a screen hanging on a wall, and how you just flat said, this doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And why is that?
You know, a big part of it is it's just the medium. It's innate to the 16:9 canvas, and I think that people have a visceral response to that rectangle that they see all the time. So, you know, I say big part of the people just ignore it. The other part of the people zone into it and they leave physical space, mm-hmm. right? So you're either having people that don't go there, or there are people that go there so deep that they're no longer actually here anymore. Mm-hmm. So neither of those conditions are particularly desirable. The other issue is it is really about pacing. So television and traditional content for 16:9 screen has a rhythm that is disjointed from what architectural rhythm is. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're in a physical space, things move at a different speed than on a screen. And so when you just put a rectangle on the wall, you have two things right next to each other moving at very, very different speeds.
Right.
And I think it just feels disjointed mm-hmm. to have a part of the wall that's changing every 30 seconds mm-hmm. is weird. It's mm-hmm. just not, it's unsettling. And then the last part is really informationally, most of the information that today's digital signage delivers, or a great deal of it, is stuff that you can get through your phone, through your pocket computer, better than you can get through that screen.
Right.
You know, there are exceptions where there's screens that pull in local information that's relevant mm-hmm. to where you are right then. But the vast majority of the stuff that's on that screen, you've got a much, much better designed interface
right.
in your pocket. It's much more user-friendly, it's interactive, and it gives you stuff that is specifically targeted for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd say on all of those accounts, the traditional digital signage that we see doesn't work. Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of costs involved in putting this podcast together, so I'm very grateful for the support this podcast will get from our new and sole sponsor, ScreenFeed. Here's founder and CEO, Jeremy Gavin.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. As content people, we love great content, and we think Dave's doing a great job with this 16:9 podcast, which is why we've offered to sponsor it. If you'd like to see the content that we create on a daily basis, head over to screenfeed.com and check it out. Let us know if we can help you in any project you're working on. And do me a favor, if you don't find what you're looking for, shoot me an email at jeremy@screenfeed.com. I'm always interested in new ways we can help. Now, back to the podcast.
Have you guys ever done something that would almost equate to traditional digital signage?
Yeah, I think as when we think of the overall experience of a building or of a museum,
yeah.
digital signage is a really vital part of that experience. You know, there have to be moments where information can be delivered, where you can engage people about their activities. Part of it is just getting out of the 16:9. If you can just turn that screen 90 degrees, mm-hmm. all of a sudden you're engaging with people in a way that you don't when it's landscape.
Right.
I mean, there's something as simple as that. Mm-hmm. You know, in our media architecture space, the building that we did in Seattle, that tower, mm-hmm. has a three-level food court and retail atrium below. Mm-hmm. And so we created digital signage totems that were integrated into the wayfinding. So they weren't standalone. They were, you know, they weren't just screens right. that were standalone screens. They were integrated into the larger wayfinding. So you had graphical totems that had a screen in them that could deliver pertinent information. And you know, we were really careful to design the visual experience to stay consistent with the more ambient or more kind of creative mm-hmm. experiences that were throughout the building. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a standalone experience, it was an integrated experience. And then the way we approached engaging with people was really through themes. So if it was snack time, you know, if it was 2 p.m, it would be like, it would say, are you ready for a pick-me-up? And then we had a CMS in the back end that you could choose which were the different amenities that would be highlighted mm-hmm. When it was pick-me-up time. Mm-hmm. So it used a lot of the ideas of digital signage, but incorporated it into a larger system.
And so much of what you're saying is just all about content as opposed to technology. Content has to lead, and then you find the appropriate technology for it.
Correct. I mean, content needs to lead, and it needs to be physically context aware, right? So mm-hmm. you need to know that this screen sits in real space. Mm-hmm. It's not just a screen. So as long as you remember that, then there's this idea to have a relationship with the space. I think one of the, I occasionally teach a class down at NYU, where we explore the idea of designing for LEDs. And the first assignment that I give them is I give them a single pixel. And I say, okay, take this one LED pixel and do three projects for me. Design something where this is an object, design something where this is a light source, and then design something where this communicates information, right? So think about this one thing as three different things. And then we do that same assignment for a strip of LEDs and then for a full canvas of LEDs. But to always remember that it's an object, that it's light, and then it also can deliver content.
Right. And walking around the offices here and the studios, I get a sense that this isn't at all always about the latest, greatest tech to use. Like, it's not bleeding edge. You're applying stuff that's pretty old school in some cases, because that's what works.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, in any permanent installation, something that's gonna last 7-10 years, bleeding edge is very high risk.
Dangerous.
Yeah. You know, when we did the World Expo Pavilion for the Shanghai World's Fair in 2010, it was gonna be up for 6 months. There's gonna be a full-time staff of technicians to run it. So there's an opportunity that bleeding edge makes sense, right? Because there's someone there so they can fix it every night and get it working again in the morning.
Fun.
Yes. Which it was a blast. You know, it's, you've got toys that you can really push the boundary with. For most of our projects that are permanent, we need to be responsible. We need to innovate, but we also need to understand the risks involved. Yeah. And so one of our major approaches is to really take the mashup approach, taking known technologies, known materials, and figuring out how you can mash them up in a new way where it is a new medium, but it is lower risk.
Right.
So, you know, we've done projects where we'll take an LED screen that might even be an older LED screen. It's 6 millimeters, it's affordable, it's technology that's been around for a while, and we'll take some cool diffusion material and put it in front of it, and all of a sudden, because it's a rear projection material, all of the bright parts of the LED screen sit on the front surface and the dark parts sit in the back surface, and you have this cool kind of three-dimensional sense that pops out of this. Nothing's new there as far as an individual object, but that combination invents something that's brand new.
Yeah, and the whole competition around resolution and everything goes away because it's all diffused.
Exactly.
So a lot of what you do is driven in some sense by data, and not necessarily numerical data, like information about something. In some cases, it's just sensors. Could you talk maybe about what you did at Terrell Place in Washington?
Sure. So in Terrell Place, it's the site of the old Hex department store. So they've got this grand lobby with these giant glass pane windows looking in off the street. And there's this long corridor that takes people through what was originally 5 or 6 different buildings that have all been connected. So this very odd corridor with all these level transitions. And so we studied that building for a while, and we really realized that the interesting thing was how people flowed through this kind of strange pathway. And so we took over all of the portals and the walls of this lobby.
Portals to the elevators.
Yeah, the portals to the elevators, and the portals that take you through this long corridor.
Okay.
And we covered them with this medium resolution LED and the diffusion in front of it, and we built these giant scenes. One is a seasonal scene that's based on the cherry blossoms of Washington, D.C. One is a more urban scene that has slices of architecture that's from these iconic architecture from D.C. And then one is really about more of an abstract flow of colors and particle systems through the space based on the movement of people. And we wanted this space to really talk to the ebb and flow of people in there. So what we did is we installed FLIR cameras up in the ceiling, so IR cameras that monitor the heat.
Yeah.
And it built a tracking system that tracked the motion of people through the space, and then really used their movement as the triggers, as what moved and changed these scenes. So in the seasonal scenes, it's people that actually move the season forward. So the cherry blossoms bud and open, and the flowers grow, and then they fall off.
If they dwell.
But only as people move by.
Right.
So you can see which corridors are used the most because they've got the most flowers that are grown in them. And it's different depending on the time of day and the day of the week, you know, which areas are used more and more. Mm-hmm. In the more abstract color play where you have these big generative particle systems, as people move by, the particles follow them or are repelled from them, and mm-hmm. there's this wonderful game of physics that is being played between the people in the building and these great big walls. Mm-hmm. But in this space, really thinking about these walls as responsive, but moving at the speed of people. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, in the corridor, we created an entire acoustic space based on some of the music that Mary Church Terrell, who the building was named after, some of the music that she was really tied to in her life. Mm-hmm. And we based it on that and worked with a great sound artist to develop this sound environment in these corridors that again also respond to mm-hmm. how busy the building is, how people are moving through the space, which thresholds you've passed through.
Right. And you also used generative data pieces in the Wells Fargo Center in Denver, right?
Yes. In Wells Fargo in Denver, some of the pieces were feeds. So we've got one that pulls from local Instagram and then builds the Rocky Mountains out of them. And mm-hmm. As you get close, you can see the larger ones. And from a distance, all of a sudden, you see the Great Mountain Range. Mm-hmm. There's other ones where we have systems of murmurations of birds, so swarms of birds and how they move through the sky, which is based on a purely algorithmic system. So it's mm-hmm. never the same. And depending on the time of the day, is what's the color of the sky, if there's clouds that are moving through, the wind moves the clouds through at different speeds, depending on the mm-hmm. actual information from outside. Mm-hmm.
And what was the thinking in that job around the way the LEDs were done? Because you've got this big soaring lobby and almost like fence slats that you created to kind of give you this window on the environment. What were you going for there?
You know, when we first looked at this space, there's this massive granite wall. It's 85 feet tall. It's probably 40 feet wide. And one of the things that we like to work with a lot here is this idea that technology and the materials of the space can become one, that mm-hmm. they're not these two separate things, but they have to work together. And so in this piece here, we put these five windows that allow you to look through the wall at times was kind of the approach. So really work with the verticality of the space, but then also make this magic window that lets you see a whole nother universe, see out into your environment in effect. And so if we had just built a giant canvas, it would just be a giant canvas. There wouldn't be that sense of looking through.
Right,
which
you
can really get. It would be overpowering. And it's not human scale, because we could have our slats at 2.5 feet width. Mm. There's a relationship to the human being where if it was 30 feet wide and 80 feet high,
right,
it would just overwhelm you.
And those sorts of things, to some degree, become tourist attractions, right?
They do. I mean, there's some tourist website that's named our lobbies the most Instagrammable sites in America, which is exciting. We never expected that.
Yeah.
And you know, when I was down working in Terrell Place, there was a family from Argentina that had Terrell Place was on their list of sites to see in Washington, D.C. And they had come there with their kid to see how it worked and to take pictures.
So it's just not signage nerds like me that go and look at those places.
No, it's not. They really become attractions. Mm-hmm. And that's, frankly, that's their goal. Their goal is to connect the building to the environment, to the community. And so when they can invite people in, when they can get people excited mm-hmm. to take part in this, they really add to the neighborhood. They add to that community.
Mm-hmm. What are you working on now, or what CSI Design working on now that you're allowed to talk about?
That is an excellent question. We're working on a few more of these commercial real estate projects. We're doing some really interesting lobbies, one in Portland, one in Glendale, California, and one in Chicago. There's one in Chicago that is pretty interesting, where we're using an infinity mirror as a way to engage with the street, mm-hmm. and then having different animations that play through it depending on the time of the day and the traffic that's moving by in front, mm-hmm. as a way for it to have a dynamic conversation with the environment outside.
So this is rarely an off-the-shelf thing where you have a client who wants to do something, and you can say, yeah, we can do what we did at Terrell in your lobby too.
We do get calls that says, can we have one of those?
Yeah.
And I think from our perspective, it doesn't quite work that way. We can give you one of those, but then it becomes an object.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, going back to the idea of it's not about the object, it's about the relationship. Mm. We can't just sell you one of those. It would be, you know, business-wise, it might be a nice thing to sell you one of those.
Right.
But design-wise, it doesn't make sense. It's not going to be successful.
Right.
Unless we really understand how this space is going to engage with the people, what's the relationships that we want to build.
Mm-hmm.
And we may be using very similar technology. It may be a really similar solution, but we need to really understand that space in order to mm-hmm. be able to determine what is the right design solution.
Mm-hmm. The last question, is there a particular technology that's emerging that you and your colleagues here are kind of jazzed up about right now?
Emerging technologies. You know, LED is not emerging anymore.
Yeah, it's rapidly evolving.
It is rapidly evolving. And there's some evolution there that's exciting for me. LED has typically been oversaturated and has this almost garish color palette to it very often.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't feel natural because of that. And there's a few manufacturers out there that are really working with the actual dyes in the chips to get a much more full color spectrum. So there's, you know, there's a couple out there that can get the Rec 2020 color spectrum, which is really broader than what you can see on your own screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's exciting to me. Laser projectors have been around for a couple years, but mm-hmm. have made projection technology be applicable for permanent installation. So that's exciting because the technology can really appear and disappear
mm-hmm.
and can engage with architecture in a really unique way that's different
mm-hmm.
than LED, where you have to have an object. And then the thing that I see that's changing are some of the tools that we're having available to us to design in. So here in this company, we're using a lot of game engine technology to be able to do pre-visualizations of the spaces that we're designing for.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's in Unity or the Unreal Engine, these are places that we can really rapidly import our 3D models and funnel video into and walk around, whether it's with our VR headset or whether it's on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
But we can get into those spaces and start to understand them in ways that we couldn't before.
Yeah.
It doesn't replace mock-ups and on-site work, but it gets us a lot further along so that when we get to the on-site,
right.
we can really be working at a much higher level of detail and finesse than we could in the past.
All right, thank you for your time.
Sure, thank you.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net every day. 16.9 the blog and now the podcast are both properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.